You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. This episode is brought to you by Bento Box and Clover, working together to provide restaurants with even more technology for a better hospitality experience. Visit getbento.com/better to learn more. Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, September 28th, 2022. And this is our 334th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is the wonderful executive chef of an iconic New Orleans restaurant, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to prove yourself as a leader. Show that you have what it takes to lead through your words and actions, demonstrating qualities of courage, good communication and intentions, accountability, focus, empathy, and passion, among others. As a leader, you may have to work harder than others to earn trust and respect, but that's what will set you apart. So lead from the heart and prove your worth. You are worthy of it. That's my tip today. Okay, I'm thrilled to have my guest joining me. It is Meg Bickford. She's the executive chef at Commander's Palace, a New Orleans landmark since 1893, known for creating great dining memories. Megan, or Meg, has called Commander's Palace Kitchen her culinary home since June 2008 and took on the role of executive chef at the New Orleans destination for leading-edge hot Creole cuisine in October 2020. Meg previously served as the executive chef of Cafe Adelaide, the Commander's family's playful modern Creole restaurant. She comes from a family with a father from New Orleans and a mother from down the bayou, so both Cajun and Creole influences run in her blood. Commander's Palace, the winner of 7 James Beard Foundation Awards, has evolved into a culinary legend. And without further ado, Meg, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you. I have to say, I was like reading up on Commander's Palace and trying to go through the whole history, and it's a lot and it's amazing. And I'm like, I feel like I've been studying for a test that, but it's like, it's incredible. It's such a legendary restaurant. So Meg, can you take us back a little bit of your history? Because I always like to start with my guests and find out how they got into the hospitality industry.
Sure. For me, I grew up, like you said, my dad's from New Orleans and my mom's from down the bayou in a small town called Cut Off, which is about an hour south of New Orleans, which looking at a map, it's kind of hard to imagine that. But I grew up in a South Louisiana family, and we tend to have big families, and everything that we do revolves around food, and it revolves around cooking. And when we're eating one meal, we're talking about what the next is going to be. And so, growing up in that environment, food was just a very important thing in my life, and being surrounded by people who appreciated food for what it does. We mourn over food and we celebrate over food. And that importance was just instilled at a young age, and the power that food has. And so I was just very drawn to it. And coming up, I learned how to cook from, you know, my parents and my grandmothers and my aunts and uncles. And, you know, everybody just knew how to cook. And I think that that's really cool. And I think that that's something that happens here in the South that doesn't necessarily happen everywhere, that things are passed down intentionally that way. And so, you know, when I was an older child, when I was in high school, I went to my dad and I said, you know, I'm thinking about going to culinary school. And he was very much taken back. And he's like, yeah, we all love to eat, but you don't understand what you're saying. You know, to be in the hospitality industry is like nothing else. And, you know, he spoke from experience. When he was young in his life, he worked a lot in hospitality and helped, you know, he ran bars when he was in college, and he helped a friend open a restaurant. And so he knew kind of what he was talking about way more than I did. And so he did. He tried to talk me out of it for a while, you know, and he told me that when people in the hospitality industry work, that's when everyone else in the world is playing. And when everyone else in the world is sleeping, that's when people in the hospitality industry play. And there's not really any time in between. And I think that that was important for him to kind of get across, because, you know, having a young daughter and a father from, you know, an older generation, for him, he wanted me to, you know, meet a man and get married and have children and, you know, live kind of an expected life, maybe. And he knew this road would be not necessarily what was expected. So I did it anyway. And I went to the Chef John Fulce Culinary Institute because I had to have a bachelor's degree. That was the deal. If my dad was going to help me in school, I had to have a bachelor's degree, which to this day, I can't thank him enough for. And he's, you know, CIA is fantastic. Johnson Wales is fantastic. You know, there's plenty of wonderful culinary schools that I could have gone to. And he said, no, you're going to understand business and you're going to understand, what it's really all about, and you're going to be successful. And all of those schools do teach a lot of that stuff. I'm not trying to say that they don't, but he pushed me and I got a Bachelor of Science in Culinary Arts, which is pretty, uncommon. And loved it. I loved school. I thought it was amazing. You know, I'm a firm believer that you get out of things what you put into them. And I definitely put my all into it. I was actually granted a scholarship to study at Institut Paul Bocuse in Lyon, France, while I was in school, which just changed my life.
Wow. I've been to the restaurant there. I mean, many years ago, I went on a mission to visit. So that's special.
It was incredibly special. And it really did. It changed my life. It changed, you know, just the way that I was going to look at the world, you know? And so after, you know, after doing that, I came home and I had, you know, a few credits left to gain before I graduated. And, all of this will lead up to Commanders, because while I was, about to graduate culinary school, and I had, you know, held jobs in, that actually, you know, cooking in restaurants is the only thing I've ever done professionally. You know, I was a waitress in a pizza spot and made pizzas in high school. And I was actually, my first job was a baker in a bagel shop. And, so it's all I've ever done. It was all I was ever really interested enough in to do. And, so when I was graduating college, one of my chef instructors, told me that he, had, handed my resume over to T. Martin, who is, one of the co-proprietors here at Commander's Palace. And I said, well, why did you do that? And he was like, well, it's something that, you know, I really think that you should do. And I don't think it's a leap that you would make on your own. And so I looked at it as, you know, if they call me for an interview, then maybe I'll use it as practice, you know, because we all, you know, I don't, still to this day, I think practicing interviewing and things like that is incredibly important. And I still do it. And so I was like, okay, well, this will be practice. And that led me at Commander's doorstep.
Wow. And then the rest is history.
kind of history. Yeah.
So you did end up working there from after meeting T?
I did. So I didn't meet her. So she took my resume and she passed it over to one of the sous chefs at the time.
Okay.
And and so I got a phone call. It was like a Tuesday night at like 8 o'clock, and I got a phone call from one of the sous chefs that was here at the time. And he said, "Hey, I have your resume in front of me." And it was, I didn't know at the time why he had my resume in front of him. And I was like, "Oh, okay." And he's like, "Yeah, you know," and we talked for a while, and he said, "Well, you know, why don't you come down to Commander's and spend a service with us, and we'll go from there." And so I did, terrified. I showed up at Commander's and I worked a service here. And at the end of the shift, I was just, my eyes were popping out of my head. I mean, I was just so amazed at what I had seen. I was so exhilarated by the energy and the level of professionalism and the speed and the efficiency, and just all of it was so intense. I think of it as like, that night I felt like I was standing in the middle of a beehive, and there's, you know, a million things happening around you, and there's this incredibly, you know, harmonious buzz, and everyone is, you know, from the outside it looks so frantic, but from the inside it's like everyone is moving in perfect unison, and it was just this really beautiful dance, and I just knew I had to be a part of it.
So you've been with the restaurant since. For listeners who might not be familiar with Commander's Palace, can you briefly tell us a little bit about the history and like what it meant to you, and like where you then, I know, went on to be the executive chef at Cafe Adelaide, which is part of the restaurant groups as their more playful modern Creole restaurant, which I believe is now closed, but you were there for a long
Correct.
Time. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Commander's is, Commander's Palace to us is a little neighborhood restaurant. It's nestled in the beautiful Garden District of New Orleans. So we are, it's a residential neighborhood, and the streets are just lined with these gorgeous mansions and lush greenery. And it's just one of my favorite places in the world. It's beautiful. And Commander's is an old Victorian mansion that sits directly across from the Lafayette No. 1 Cemetery. And it's so quintessential New Orleans, but this restaurant has been here for a very long time. I think 1893, the house was built by Emile Commander, and it was, for his daughter's wedding. And I don't think that wedding ever happened. And eventually the house was turned into a restaurant. But in the 70s, Ella Brennan, who was running Brennan's on Royal at the time, moved her business over to Commander's Palace. And so Ella is kind of the matriarch of the Commander's family of restaurants. And she was just an incredible woman, to say the very least. She appreciated and loved food so much, and she loved this city so much, and she knew that food was power, and that it could change people's lives, and she wanted to be there to help change people's lives. And so she got together with a very talented man, Paul Prudhomme, and the two of them, to me, their time together in the 70s here at Commander's Palace was one of the most important times in food in New Orleans, because that is when the real clash happened between Cajun and Creole cuisine. And, Paul was a Cajun man, and he cooked the food was very heavy and very rich, and which we all love that, but it's not necessarily something that you want to, you would expect out of a fine dining experience. and which was more of what Creole food was evolving into. So Ella and Paul together really, you know, focused on how to bring the two together and to highlight the food of our region. You know, at the time, you know, kind of across the country, if you were eating fine dining, you were eating French cuisine, you know, and a lot of people were importing products from all over to provide a fine dining experience. And Ella and Paul are looking at, you know, our beautiful area that we have. I mean, we are, you know, we call it our sportsman's paradise, and we have, you know, the beautiful seafood of the Gulf and fabulous indigenous ingredients. It's why aren't we using this? You know, this is what people are eating at home. We can elevate this food. And that's exactly what they did. And after Paul came a very young man at the time, Imrul Agassi.
Yeah.
And and everyone knows who that is. And Imrul and Ella did a lot of very special things together. And I think, you know, Imrul is still to this day very proud to talk about his time with Ella and how she really helped him grow into himself. And him being executive chef here was way more than just executive chef. I mean, he really did find himself, and he, with her kind of more than blessing, more her nudge, he left Gamander's to go on and have an incredibly successful career. As we all know, it's such a household name. After Imrul was the late and great Jamie Shannon, who's just a marvelous man, and again pushed Cajun and Creole cuisine. You know, I mean, through each chef, there was this major evolution happening here at Commander's. And when Jamie Shannon passed away, Tori McPhail took over. And Tori had been with the family for a few years, but still a very young man. And he is like no one I've ever met. And I've had the privilege. I worked under him for about 12 years. And he was just always pushing us forward. And he was all about the evolution of Commander's and what is next, and making us the forefront of modern New Orleans cuisine. And so this restaurant has been through this incredible wave of a very short list of very powerful and phenomenal chefs. And that's the goal, is to keep pushing forward with them. But Commander's is a very celebratory restaurant. It's incredibly special. It's exciting. And it's, I think, you know, talking about all the chefs that have come through Commander's, I still think that our specialty is making memories. I think what happens in the dining room is kind of unmatched. It's an incredible place to be.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, it is incredible. Quite a history, quite a lineup of chefs. And I have memories of going to Commander's, and I mentioned this on my last show. My sister had gone to Tulane, and so I visited New Orleans many times when I was I guess in like the early 90s and yeah. Over the years, and it's always been one of my favorite cities, and I love visiting, and I'm so due to come back.
Yes.
I need to get back to Commander's. So tell us, what is it like now taking over this restaurant, this iconic restaurant from Tori, and have you, I guess, like from tradition and then moving forward, you know, maybe say keeping up with the times, like, are mm-hmm. you putting new dishes on the menu? Are there certain dishes that you have to keep on the menu? You know,
I think that's a fair question. I think, you know, we'll get back to taking over because it was quite an interesting time. but I mean, that's one thing, at Commander's and having, you know, people that have run this restaurant for so long, you know, with Ella Brennan and now, her daughter and niece, T. Martin and Lally Brennan, they know food and they love food, you know? So to have owners of a restaurant like this, so involved in the creative process and so involved in wanting our restaurant to be, again, on that leading edge, we don't like to talk about tradition, you know? I mean, we appreciate our history very much because there's so much of it and it's so good and so many great things have happened in this building. And, you know, what generations of people have celebrated with us and feel about us is incredibly important. But what's really important to us is, you know, that all of that can go away. You know, I mean, we have to keep pushing forward and, you know, we have to be the best tomorrow, not just today and not just yesterday. And they are very much a part of that creative process. And we have a stellar team. I'm very fortunate that I've got a team of sous chefs who are very interested in pushing and making ourselves uncomfortable and making it hard in order to do fun and exciting things. And you don't know what's going to work until you try it, you know, and having that freedom and that liberty and that kind of confidence as a team to be able to do that is it won't stop you. And that's something that every chef along the way has made sure was known and important and felt. But we changed the menu here all the time, you know, and that's nothing new. So yes, there are favorites. There's a lot of favorites. It's been an incredible history of incredible chefs. There's tons of favorites. I have a lot of favorites.
Can you name one?
Yeah.
Is that like naming, picking your children, you know?
Kind of, yeah. But I mean, one of my favorite dishes from Commander's Pass would be like the oyster and artichoke dome. And that's something that Tori did, you know, ages ago. But it's like these, you know, beautiful, supple, briny Gulf oysters poached in this light absinthe cream with a puff pastry shell, and it's got like bacon lardoons and artichoke hearts, and it's divine. It's divine.
Yeah.
So it'll show its face every once and again when I'm missing it, you know. And so we'll do a different version of it, or we'll put it on the menu for the holidays because it is, you know, it's something that people taste and it takes them back to the first time they had it, you know, and that's fun and it's exciting that we can provide that for people. But we are always changing, you know, and that's the exciting part is that we're not reined in by our past or our history. And it's fun that people keep coming back to see what we're doing next. They don't just keep coming back for that.
Yeah.
That oyster and artichoke dome.
Yeah. Makes wonderful. And so, yeah, I got you with two questions there. So you want to talk a little bit about coming, like what it was like to take over this kitchen. And it was during the period of the pandemic, which we're still kind of in.
This has definitely been, like my dream job for a long time. Never did I expect that this is how it would all unfold, you know? So, it was and still is a very, interesting time. But I mean, Commander's Palace, was forced to close its doors to our guests in March of, 2020. And, that was probably one of the worst days of my life, you know, having to communicate that to a lot of employees was, it was obviously the fear of the unknown and what was going to happen was pretty hard to stomach, but making those phone calls and seeing those people face to face and having to tell them that I didn't have the answers and that we were closing our doors for now was probably one of the hardest days of my life. And immediately, you know, the next day we all woke up and the small team of us that was left got to work. And we immediately started doing to-go food, which I don't think anyone at Commander's has ever, you know, muttered those words before. And so it was very, very different for us. It was not something that we had ever done or thought of doing. And here it is, that's now our only source of income. So we struggled through that. But we tried to make the best of it. And, you know, we couldn't do jazz brunch in the garden room anymore on Sundays. So we would, you know, one of our service captains plays the trumpet. So we had him on the sidewalk playing the trumpet to no one, you know, while we were doing to-go food. Just trying to continue to be ourselves in a weird way. You know, it was just kind of hard. Everybody was scrambling and trying to hold on to some sort of sanity. And we did to-go food and immediately all just, you know, I like to say that we stapled Jell-O to the ceiling for a while and just trying to find something that would stick and something that made sense. And a few things for our business came out of that that are still here and things that are doing very well. Probably about a year and a half before the pandemic, we had been talking to Gold Belly and trying to see how and if we could ship Commander's Palace experiences across the country. And it was something that, you know, us in day-to-day operations were, I'll speak for myself, was scared of, you know, and how do we find time to do it? And where do we put it? And how, you know, like just logistically while trying to run this restaurant seemed kind of impossible. And so once the pandemic hit, you know, we called Gold Belly and said, hey, you remember all those conversations we were having? Let's start tomorrow. And we did. And so, you know, we started selling turtle soup and the smoked boudin stuffed quail and people started buying it. And it was really exciting. And so
delivery anywhere in the country?
Yeah. Yep. Anywhere in the country.
Amazing.
Commander's Palace to your doorstep. Yeah, it was amazing. And it was really exciting because, you know, not much was exciting during that time. So any win you got was a huge win. And so, you know, we were able to keep some of the sous chef team on and, you know, we had orders to fulfill and it was very exciting. And while we are doing all of this, there is, you know, in preparation that, okay, we're going to open in a few weeks. Okay. We're going to open in a few weeks, you know, and just kept talking about, you know, when we get open and, you know, constant communication with employees. And, you know, I mean, we serve a family meal at the restaurant twice a day. So we feed our staff a hot meal twice a day. And when the restaurant closed, it was like, you know, everybody kind of scattered, but it was like we were still providing a hot meal once a day and still, you know, I mean, just anything and everything that we could do to keep momentum up and to keep, you know, our family close to us. And one thing that we missed so much was breaking bread together and enjoying each other. And so we thought, you know, that we should do that. Like Zoom was a thing that we didn't know what Zoom was. We didn't like so many people. That wasn't a part of our world. And so there was this Zoom thing going around. And so we were like, well, let's get on Zoom. What can we do on Zoom? And we want to host parties again. We want to have people here again. If they can't be here, can they be at home and we can still do something? And so we started doing wine and cheese Zooms where we would buy, we would sell kits of, you know, a few bottles of wine and a few different types of cheeses. And we would get the, you know, the person who made the cheese or the person who we would get the cheesemaker to join us and we would get the winemakers to join us on Zoom and we would sell tickets and invite people to come.
It was really successful. I mean, it was from everything I read about it, right?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, we would every Wednesday night, we would get so excited and we would like, we would have theme nights. So everybody, you know, we're in New Orleans and we can't do anything without a costume. So everybody would get all dressed up in their costumes and we would get on Zoom and we would drink wine and eat cheese. And I mean, it was so much fun and it became such a thing that it became a serious business that we were running during the pandemic. And, it was a blast. And so, you know, we had good things going, but it was still this, we were still, you know, in this empty mansion, and she was not happy about being empty. And so we were all just, you know, anticipating when we would be able to be together again and to have, you know, life in the building again. And so finally, that opportunity came in September of 2020. And so we were planning on reopening the restaurant, and, you know, we slowly started bringing employees back and were just in preparation to open. And T and Lally, our owners, pulled me aside, and we had some multiple days of multiple conversations that were very kind of intense, and talking about you know, the future of Commanders and my future there, and you know, what I thought a good strong leader needed to be, and what those characteristics were, and, you know, just really kind of diving deep into leadership and my thoughts and my goals and what I thought was important, and which were phenomenal conversations, but I knew it was all leading somewhere, and I was very nervous about where it was going. And I sat down with Tori, the executive chef at the time, and he said that it was time for him to move on, and that, you know, he was from the Northeast the Northwest, and had spent so much time away from his family. And, you know, he had nieces and nephews that were growing up, and he had missed time with them, and was ready to move closer to family. And this is 22 years Tori McPhail had been at this restaurant. So it was definitely the, you know, end of an era, the end of decades of strong leadership. And so T and Lally asked me to take over, which was amazing and phenomenal, and an absolutely terrifying thought.
But you went for it, as I think you certainly should have, and I'm glad you did. And what a history! I mean, what a you know, history of chefs to now be a part of. It's incredible, and I had so many with your story. I was thinking, well, first of all, when you said can't do anything without a costume, I'm like, oh my God, I wish I had a costume on right now. But I just getting through the pandemic and what you guys went through, and that you were able to figure out, you know, how to do an incredible party through Zoom and get through it. I give you guys so much credit. And so now are you, because I want to ask you my question from an ex guest, but before that, how are things now? Are you fine? I mean, are leading this kitchen? Is it what you, I mean, your fears, have they gone away?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I don't want them to, because I think that's, it's important to be motivated by fear, you know? But no, they haven't, and I like it that way. I have an incredible team. I really do. I feel like, you know, I'm so lucky to be working side by side with the people that I do, and I feel very privileged for that. And we, you know, are constantly building a phenomenal team of servers and cooks, and we are going places, you know, and you feel it. You feel the excitement in the restaurant all the time, and there's a lot of growth to be had. You know, we've started these businesses during the pandemic, and 2 years later, we're still nurturing them in certain ways. And the restaurant is very alive again, and it feels good. And, you know, I don't think that that those fears or those you know, the weight of the position that I hold will ever go away. You know, I mean, I feel like I stand on the shoulders of giants, and it's very big shoes to fill, not just for that, but for this city. And I just feel honored that I get to wake up every day and come here, you know?
Congratulations to you. I mean, it's amazing. And I'm proud
Thank
of
you.
I'm so glad I got to break bread with you and Lolly.
Yeah.
in Aspen, yeah, where we met in June for and had a fabulous dinner together. So yeah, and I have to get back down there. Okay, so before we take a break, let me ask you my questions from my last guest on episode 333. I had on Matt Friedlander. He's an industry veteran and the co-owner of Sally Can Wait, which is a Miami Vice-inspired bar and restaurant on Manhattan's Lower East Side. So his two-part question is, where do you enjoy eating out and or drinking in New Orleans? And I'll wait for the second part. But okay. Note that he said that he was about to get married and start a family. Oh, this that realized the second part. He noted that he has a lot of family in New Orleans, and he's been visiting since he was a kid. And he would certainly move down there. And he just loves New Orleans like I do. So, where do you enjoy eating out and drinking?
Well, I'll give him three that the next time he comes into town, he has to visit. Lengua Madre, it's tasting menu. It's phenomenal. It's my dear friend, Ana Castro. She's just incredible. It's an incredible restaurant, and he's got to go. Maypop is
Michael Goulata.
Yeah, Maypop is Michael Goulata. That is one, like, kind of, there's a group of us here at Commanders, like T, our owner, my dear friend Leela, who does a lot of our creative side with business. I think that's like all of our, like one of our secret top favorite restaurants in the city. Maypop is incredible. It's incredible. Michael is incredible.
I've been there, and I met Michael at Aspen, or maybe at a different event many years ago, and gotten to know him, and he's awesome. So
he is. Yeah. He gave me the pleasure of being able to host him a few weeks back. We did a dinner together here at Commanders, but we graduated from the same culinary school, and I've just watched his career in awe for sure. And he's opening up a new restaurant, Tana, hopefully next year, that I'm very excited about. But yeah, he's awesome. So anything Goulata, I would go for. Then Margie's Grill is awesome. It's kind of outside of like the tourist zone a little bit. It's on South Broad, which is great because everybody that dines there is, you know, it's a neighborhood restaurant. It's awesome. But really eclectic food, just a phenomenal spot. The stuff they do is really, it's great.
Ah, terrific.
My big three. Yep.
Putting on my list too. Okay. And so his second part of his question is, as a newish mom, how do you balance being a parent with being the executive chef at the most renowned restaurant in New Orleans? How do you take care of work-life balance? And this is when he noted that he was getting married. He got married like the day after our show.
Whoa. That's awesome. That.
And he started about that. He mentioned he's thinking of starting a family. So he wants to know, how are you balancing it all?
A very, very dear friend, but a very intelligent person told me a while ago that I should remove the word balance from my vocabulary because it's unfair. and I'm really glad that that they said that. Because this is, you know, a woman who just had an incredibly successful career, and she has raised children into adulthood. And I think it's absolutely true. I don't know that there is, I just don't know that that word necessarily belongs, because when you think about a work-life balance, especially, you know, doing what I do, I work a lot, you know, and I want to be in this restaurant all the time. And, to say that there's a balance to it, I don't think it's fair. I think that's an individual thing, and you kind of have to figure that out. And I think, the quality of the time that is spent, either place, is way more important than the quantity of time spent. And, you know, there are some days when I have to stop myself and say, okay, I have to carve out time, you know, and I have to, if I can leave early, I'm going to leave early. And if I can come in late, I'm going to come in late, and I need to spend time with my daughter or spend time with my husband. But it's, you know, I think that's such a unique thing. And I don't think that saying that there is, you know, a work-life balance, because that implies that it's even. I feel like you're, you know, I was at least setting myself up for disappointment and failure. And so looking at the way that I look at it is quality of time over quantity of time, and taking full advantage of all the time. I think there are 24 usable hours in every day, and it's all about how you use them.
And on that fabulous note, let's take a break. That's good stuff, really good stuff. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll play my speed round. We'll talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. With over 70% of diners researching restaurants online before they go in person, a strong digital presence is more important than ever. Bento Box's website, marketing tools, and commerce platform help restaurants get discovered online, make more money, and engage diners in person and virtually. And Clover's world-class POS and payment system streamlines daily operations for a totally seamless experience. With Bento Box and Clover working together, restaurants now have an all-in-one solution that makes it easy to deliver better hospitality from the kitchen to tableside and beyond. Bento Box and Clover, the right recipe for hospitality. Visit getbento.com/better to learn more. That's getbento.com/BETTER. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Meg Bickford. She's the executive chef at Commander's Palace, a New Orleans landmark since 1893, known for creating great dining memories. So Meg, it's time for my speed round. So what this is I'm going to name a couple things and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Eat in at home or eat out at a restaurant?
Eat out at a restaurant.
Indoor dining or al fresco dining?
Indoor.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
All of the above.
Like it. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think I'm going to go a la carte.
Okay. And you're just a la carte at Commander's, right? You don't have a tasting.
We don't right now, but we will, come December, we'll start our tasting menu again. We've been off and on for the last 2 years. It's, you know,
okay.
Things have happened, but no, we like to have a tasting menu. So come December, we'll definitely have one back on. And my goal is to just keep it going and not stop it.
Cool. Okay. How about small plates or large plates?
Either a ton of small plates or a ton of large plates to share.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
How about muffaletta or po' boy?
Po' boy.
Ooh, po' boy. Po' boy. Any type of po' boy.
Yeah. Roast beef or fried shrimp, fried oysters, fried oyster with roast beef gravy. That's one of my all-time favorites. Ooh.
All right. Nice combo. Okay. A couple more. Raw oysters or char-grilled oysters?
Raw.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
And last one's Manhattan, Brooklyn, or New Orleans?
I mean, if I have to choose my favorite, it's New Orleans.
I mean, I figured I was guessing I would use that. cool. That's the game.
You're awesome. Sweet. That was fun. I like it.
Thanks. I like it too. Okay. So for industry news, I picked out an article that was in Bon Appetit magazine, and it's entitled "Restaurant Reservation Culture is Out of Control. Hour and a half lines, elite membership, shady reservation trading groups, and the battle to find somewhere to eat." And this is by Ali Francis. This came out about a week or so ago. I thought it would be interesting to talk to you a little about it, just because it's like, I mean, since we were talking about the pandemic and how everything changed, and now as things are getting back to whatever this new normal, it's you know, they're people are noticing it's harder to make restaurant reservations. This article cited a couple reasons, saying, well, many spots have more limited hours and there's a lack of staff as well. Some said something about having reservations makes the business more predictable for them. So, I mean, as someone who dines out a lot and makes a lot of reservations, I'm like it's like a hobby. I don't know. It's just part of my job almost at this point.
Yeah.
But, I have noticed it's challenging to get reservations at, especially at the new hot restaurants in New York City. I mean, that's always been, I mean, that's like not that different, but I think I find it is a little, I am noticing a little harder, but I also find as someone who goes out a lot by myself that as a walk-in, it's easy to still, going as a walk-in as someone solo, I'm able to get a seat at a bar a lot now. During the pandemic, when that was like, you couldn't do that as an option, go as a walk-in, I really missed it. Like, it was sort of like one of those things I took for granted with restaurants. But what are you finding with reservations at Commander's and also just in New Orleans?
Well, you know, I mean, we're definitely feeling the same thing, you know what I mean? That it is more challenging. And, there's a great positive in that. And I'm sure anyone who doesn't work in the industry doesn't want to hear that. But to me, it means that the demand is back and that's phenomenal. You know, I mean, just knowing that, because, you know, there was a point in time, you know, in the last 2 years where you were just praying that the phone would ring.
Yeah. Thinking it was like
people were scared and people weren't eating out, you know? So to hear that to me is, you know, we are getting back to whatever this new normal is. The demand to eat in restaurants is strong. And so that's immediately what I think of when I hear this. Now, yes, it's frustrating to not be able to get a reservation when you want to go somewhere. But there is, you know, I just want everybody to take a deep breath and see the positive in that just for our industry as a whole.
Yeah, 100% agree. You're right.
Yeah. But it is, it's, you know, for us, we haven't had the luxury to have the amount of staff that we had in 2019. That has not happened for us yet. And so to say that, you know, we do limit how many guests we're going to serve because we still have an expectation of the service that we are going to provide. And we need to have confidence that we are going to be able to provide that service. So we have a choice where we can take as many reservations as people will call, or we can decide that we know that we can do this well. And so this is what we're going to do. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's smart. And I think, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, what you're saying and what you're finding there is at least from what I see here in New York, it's similar. And so maybe this is just what is happening. I mean, that's what this article is saying. Like, this is kind of happening across the country, many places. I mean, they did note a couple examples in New York, places I'm familiar with, knowing that like this place called Dame, that's very hard to get into. You kind of, people line up, they're open for walk-ins only on Mondays, people line up. And then this article touched on these like scalpers and digital subscriptions, which that I'm not familiar with.
Me neither, and that sounds crazy.
So, but I do sometimes, I mean, on Resy, you know, the reservation platform, I use the Notify, what's it called, the whatever feature. And I've gotten reservations through that sometimes. Like, you got to kind of be looking at your phone, right, when you get the, you know, alert, but it works. So I don't I mean, I think it's hard to get reservations now more than it was. But as you noted, it's like a good thing in a sense. Like restaurants
yeah,
are,
and I mean, man. I mean, believe me, I see it both ways. But yeah, I mean, to me, it's exciting to know that, you know, we're still wanted. We're still, you know, like that, yeah. That restaurants are as important as we think they are, you know?
Yeah. So. And how many seats are you? I mean, your restaurant's quite large, right?
It is. We can configure it a lot of different ways. So there's not really an answer to that question.
Okay. Everyone just has to go down to New Orleans and and see for yourself. And you should. Everyone should come visit you. Okay. So I want to, before my solo dining experience, just talk about a little bit some industry events, because this is tis the season. And as I mentioned on my last show, last night I went to the 13th Annual Wellness in the Schools 2022 Gala, which was at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And it was sneaker chic as the dress code, which is cool because I wore sneakers, so it was very comfortable. And the sneaker theme reminded me, last show I mentioned I didn't think I'd been to one of their galas, but I had been, because I remember helping out one of my clients there, and because of the sneaker thing, which is fun. It's like dress up, but like make sure you're comfortable. And they always pick great venues, and I have to say it was pretty special last night to be walking through the Met Museum at night while it's closed, and they set up this beautiful event with, it had amazing chefs, and it was really lovely. I saw people I knew, like Claudia Fleming and James Kent was there, and JJ Johnson, and it was this is Wellness in the Schools event that is a national nonprofit that teaches kids healthy habits to learn and live better. So it was for a great cause. So thank you for having me. Their website is wellnessintheschools.org if anyone wants to check it out. And then I had a double header. I headed downtown. It was the 2022 Liquor Award celebration at Crown Shy, Saga, and Overstory, which is James Kent's restaurants in the financial district, which I'd been to Saga recently for dinner, and it's another outstanding venue. And this was a really fun party celebrating these awards for the liquor.com's website. And I saw people like Heritage Radio's Southern Teague, who's a fellow host, and Dale DeGroff, who's been on my show. And there was a really amazing room filled of kind of like legendary beverage people who, also coming off the pandemic times, it's like being back at events is still really, really special, and kind of like we're all not used to it. So that was great. Their website's liquor.com, and thank you for having me there. And then tonight it's like a crazy week. I'm going after the show to La Dame de Escoffier, New York's new member induction, which is taking place at El Coro, and I'm a member of that organization. So we're inducting our new members, which is exciting. And then John George is having a party tonight for the Tin Building. I was thinking, double headers, does that make a home run? I don't know. Hang around with this, but busy. And I know other events happening too tonight as well. So it's like event season is back. Are you finding that down there, Meg, with events?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're getting close to holiday season, and you know, this week we're starting to feel a little bit of a break from the heat. So everybody's going nuts. You know, it's a lot of good stuff happening all over the city.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And fall is typically a busy event time. I mean, even that was before the pandemic, it's always that way.
Yeah.
It seems now that people can do events, they are, and it's festive. So busy, but, busy good. Okay, so for my solo dining experience this week, it's at Corner Bar. Here's the rundown. 60 Canal Street, Lower East Side, New York City, in the new Nine Orchard Hotel in the what they're calling the Dime Square neighborhood. The concept, it's an American bistro inspired by legendary bistros and taverns in cities around the world. The chef and owner is Ignacio Matos of Matos Hospitality. His restaurants include Estella, Altro, Paradiso, and Lodi. Talked about going solo at Lodi on episode 304. Executive director of food and beverage is Jason Pfeiffer, and director of food and beverage is Stuart Craigie. Well, why'd I go? Well, this is a new spot. I didn't have a reservation, though. Talk about that in a minute. I'm an Ignacio fan, and it just sounded just like a place to check out. So my experience, this is a few weeks ago. I was downtown, I had had like an earlier bite to eat, but it was kind of like 9:30-ish, and I was a little hungry, and I was nearby. So I decided to pop in for this like late-ish solo dinner, and the space is really inviting. It's on a prime corner location in this elegant, beautiful new hotel, and they have a really big bar. So I opted to sit at the bar. Place had really good energy. I chatted with the bartender a little bit. Happy to be there. I had a very nice time. And afterward, actually, through social media, I connected with Stuart. I had posted a photo of the corner of the restaurant with its alfresco dining, and he noticed he was actually in my photo. So he asked me to send it to him. So I didn't meet him there, but I met him after, which is the cool thing about social media. So, and I'm planning to go back and meet him in person. Okay, so what did I get? Well, the menu, everything looked fantastic, but I went with the Corner Bar Burger because I just had to. And it had smoked onion remoulade and pickles on the side. It came with New York cheddar. And I also got a side of pommes frites with aioli. My take, delicious burger, manageable size, I'd say. It was perfectly cooked. It had a smokiness from the sauce. It just hit the spot. The fries were fabulous, perfectly crispy, came with ketchup, mustard, and the aioli. It's so funny. I always, like, I love fries, but I only eat like a small handful. I kind of wish they had like a smaller version of fries, but I'm probably in the minority of that. Most people just eat the whole plate because fries are great. Okay, so the ambiance is... it's a stylishly sophisticated space. It's got windows facing the street. And as I said, it has a very large bar. It goes almost along the whole side of the dining room, which is like a long rectangular shape. And then there's tables on the other side. It's got very inviting lighting. And the hotel is really, really beautiful too. I'd say it's perfect for a solo at the bar or a date night or dinner with friends. Also, you could go for breakfast or lunch meeting. I think it's serves its purpose for everyone and any time. Interesting tidbit. So Nine Orchard is this new elegant hotel that transformed a Lower East Side landmark originally built in 1912 that was a bank, and it turned into this stunning, expertly renovated design with incredible architecture, restoring its historic bones. And I popped in after to the hotel's like cocktail lounge just to see, and it's really quite a nice room. I would definitely go back there for drinks and with maybe meet some friends. And Ignacio is opening another restaurant in this space as well. Personal fun fact. So a few nights ago, I was down in the West Village at a coffee shop, and I was doing work, and it got late, and I was hungry, and I was craving a burger, and I remembered that Corner Bistro was around the corner. And I'm in this neighborhood a lot, and I've been to Corner Bistro, but not in many, many years. So, and this is an institution that opened in 1961. So anyways, I decided to pop in there at the bar and get their burger. They have a bistro burger with American cheese and bacon, and they've got their fries. And this is more like it's just a dive bar burger, but it was great. And I'm glad I got back, and I won't wait as long to get back there too. Okay, so the cost of Corner Bar Burger, my meal, was $36, and that's not including tax and tip. Would I go back? Yes, I'd like to. I'd like to go for dinner and check out, or even breakfast. I like to check out more of the menu because it's always a burger is great, but it's sort of it's just like one take on what the restaurant's doing, of course. So their website is cornerbarnyc.com and Instagram at cornerbarnyc. So there you go, my long-winded solo dining burger story experience. Are you craving a burger now is the question.
I am.
Well, I have to say before the show too, I was on your website and looking through the menu and I was just like, oh my God, this food, there's nothing like it. Nothing like it. So, okay. So it's time for the final question. My next guests are Ronnie Mazumdar and Chef Chintan Padia. They're the co-owners of Unapologetic Foods, which is an award-winning restaurant group that is out to redefine Indian food. And their restaurants include Damaka, Sema, Ada, Masala & Sons, which just opened, and they have Rowdy Rooster and Kabwala, and a couple other concepts. They're awesome. They were in Aspen too. Actually, a lot of people were in Aspen. Okay, so Meg, can you please ask a question for Ronnie and Chintan?
Yes. Well, I have two. I would like to know, what is one thing that you want people to unlearn about Indian food?
Ooh, I like it. Mm-hmm. Unlearn.
Because I feel like what they're doing is so... It's so in depth, you know, and it's not a blanket. And I feel like, you know, way too many, especially Americans, have a blanket concept of what Indian food is. So I would love to know what they would like for people to unlearn. And, with this like rapidly expanding restaurant group that they have, I would, you know, guessing that when you have that many restaurants, you kind of look at them as their children. And I'm wondering if they have a favorite one.
Ooh.
I don't even know if they could answer that, but
yeah, I'll ask. You never know. Have the same answer. They might have a different one. You never know. Yeah, they've been on fire. they keep opening spots and getting great accolades. So I'm excited.
It's very exciting. Yeah.
Chat with them. And yeah, so I will find out. And this is one of those shows where I needed a couple hours to talk with you. But we got through a lot and I'm so glad and honored that I met you and got to spend some time with you and Lolly. Like, it was so special to me. I just have to say, like, our dinner and getting to know each other just really, really means a lot to me. And having you now on this show with me and hearing about your story and what you're doing, all the fabulous things you're doing in New Orleans at Commander's and beyond is just means so much to me. So thank you so much. And I just wish you so much continued success. Because I know, as you said, it's been hard and
it's been hard in the best way, you know. But you are too kind, Sherry. Thank you so much for your kind words.
Oh, you're very welcome. And please send my best to Lolly. I have to meet T. I don't think I've met her before. But when I get down there, I will, or when I'm coming, I'll let you know because I want
to. Please do. Yeah, we'd love to have you. I'd love to break bread again with you because that was a wonderful time. Yeah.
Thank you. And if you come up to New York, let me know too.
I promise. Here.
I'll be the one to get the reservation.
Right.
Okay, my guest today has been Meg Bickford. She's the executive chef at Commander's Palace, a New Orleans landmark since 1893, known for creating great dining memories. Commander's Palace website is commanderspalace.com. They're on social at Commander's Palace and Meg is at Meg Bickford. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Kevin. Thanks again to Meg. And thanks to Mary Wagstaff, who helped pull this whole thing together. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bayer. I will be back next week with a new show. I hope you'll tune in then. And thank you, as always, for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.